Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Medical Marketing Podcast. This week, we're going to talk about how to successfully grow and expand an existing private practice with someone who's done just that. Our guest today is Dr. Daniel Chang, co-owner and refractive surgeon at Empire Eye and Laser Center in Bakersfield, California. Over the years, he and his staff have grown Empire into a thriving practice serving the Bakersfield community, and he's leveraged that experience to open up a new sister practice, Parkway Optical Boutique. So we're excited to learn from his experience and get some pearls on the topic of growing a healthcare practice. Dr. Chang, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Trevor. Thank you for having me.
So Dr. Chang, just by way of introduction, tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice.
Sure, Crawford. Empire Eye and Laser started back in 1998. Actually, the founder of the practice, Jim Schuler, brought my brother on board just a couple years after that in 2000. So they grew it for several years. And in 2008, Jim Schuler retired. And that same year, I came into town and joined my brother. So I was a couple years out of training in practice in Arizona. Then I came here to Bakersfield to do the family thing. So my brother and I decided to work on this practice together and live together and have our kids grow up together.
How fun. So what made you choose ophthalmology as a specialty to go into?
Well, it's been an interesting journey. And it's fun because people have asked for many years, do your brother and you, did you go in for the same reasons? And we kind of had our own sets of reasons and we all had our own journeys. But one of the neat things about the field was I really enjoyed the technology aspect of things and what we're able to do, the impact we can make in people's lives, the relative cleanliness of the practice in terms of how we interact with people, not needing them to undress and doing other things and putting on gloves for routine exams most of the time. It's something where it's also something where the actual work we do and the quality makes a difference in terms of visual outcomes and qualities. That has a concrete difference, that the care that we take makes a difference. Beforehand, when I was thinking, it's like, oh, this is not one of the really busy professions where we're spending lots of hours, but that's turned out to be untrue. We always find ways to fill in our days with plenty of work to do. So it's as busy as you want to make any other specialty.
Hmm. So what does a typical day look like in your practice for you on a day-to-day basis? What does that look like?
Well, the nice thing about ophthalmology and about our practice, obviously, is a combination of clinic and surgery. I see patients certain days. I do surgery on other days. And one thing that I've built into as we've grown the practice is we have associate MDs and also optometrists. So I have some dedicated administrative time, which is filled up with meetings and calls and trying to get emails done and things like that. And it's a good balance of and good mix of different things. We generally start anywhere from 7 to 8 in the morning, depending on the day, and we'll run through about 5 o'clock from a patient care standpoint. But the work can continue on. And one of my goals has been to try not to take the work home, make that family time, but be able to do the work during the day as much as possible.
So, you and your brother enter into this existing practice, and over the years, you seek to grow it even more beyond, the way that you found it. What are some of the biggest challenges that you encountered while you were trying to grow the practice over the last decade?
Well, I think, in terms of growth, there's different ways you can look at growth. Obviously, you can look at your financials and P&L, and that's something that, you want to grow at a steady pace. That's never really been a specific goal. We've never set financial goals in terms of growth. What we find is, hey, what are the needs within the practice? Do we need more patients? Do we need more rooms? Do we need more providers? Balancing those three has always been the challenge because if you have too much of one and not enough of the other, then you're not able to maximize your efficiency. Because our goal is really about being efficient. We want to have a busy day, a full day. Obviously, we need the financials to work, but we want something that, where you feel like you're not constantly struggling because, your practice is out of balance. I think the other way we grow is just in quality. Our predecessor was able to retire in his late 40s. His goal was, to build a very busy and successful financial practice and be able to retire early and to move on to other interests. And that hasn't been our focus. Our focus has been on bringing in the quality, getting involved in R&D and research, doing things that really pushes the technology and the quality of what we're able to deliver to our patients. So I think those are a little bit less concrete from a financial standpoint. You can't just look at a number and track it, but the ability to give do publications, give presentations, be involved in different advisory boards for industry, helping technologies and shaping the way we think as a field, certainly has growth and reward in it. And that's something that we've chosen to focus on as well.
So ultimately, providing all of those services, providing a wonderful patient experience, but also trying to remain in balance and see what are those areas that really need a little bit of help or need more investment to try to, bolster those, if you will.
For sure. And one thing that we realized in the past few years, and actually our staff came to us with this, is the importance of our staff. I think a lot of us as physicians think patients first, right? We always put the patients first. But really to achieve that, and a lot of companies, the Disney company has shown that to do that, to put your customers first, is really by putting your employees first. And that's not, just in terms of your entry-level employees and what you pay them, but it's about developing them, obviously paying them well, developing managers, training them, having people who are good at that, and developing a whole network and structure. As an organization, the medical practice surgery center and our management group, we're approaching 80 FTEs. And so to be able to run that as kind of a quote unquote moms and pops kind of office, we can't do that anymore. So we've not brought in specific professional managers, but what we've done is we've identified people from within who have management skills and try to build them up in order to have layers of management within our practice. So really investing in our people, and that's really the funnest part, is investing in people and seeing them grow. Somebody who may come in as maybe an optician or a front office person, growing to where they're really running the whole practice and doing a good job of it.
No, that's great. And I mean, I talk to a lot of doctors who, would say the same thing or something very similar about patients. Hey, we don't just look at this one issue that the patient's having. We try to view it in a more holistic way, to view the person as the whole. And it sounds like you're trying to do the same thing with your employees to enrich them over time, to help them develop those leadership skills. So it's not just, here's our budget, here are all the salaries we're paying, but how are these people really doing? How are we both leading them and helping them develop and grow in those skills over time as well?
Exactly. We spend more time with our work family sometimes than our home family, at least more waking hours. And what a waste it would be if all that meant was a paycheck. If we can grow, and I like to tell my staff this, and whenever I interview somebody, we try to help people grow professionally, in terms of your skills and your knowledge, and obviously your pay, as your responsibilities grow. We help people grow relationally, so interacting with people, and so much of what we do is interaction, and being able to improving those skills at work helps us bring that home with our families, significant others, kids, friends. And then finally, in areas of spiritual, if someone is interested and want to learn and grow in that area and see how you incorporate faith into life and work, we certainly are open to figuring out how to do that through the workplace. So it's a great opportunity. And at the end of the day, as Steve Jobs says, I don't want to die as the richest guy in the graveyard. He wanted to do great things with smart people, and we want to do some really cool things with some great people and really invest in the people that we work with. So that brings a significance beyond just the next patient, next cataract, the next whatever we're taking care of.
No, that's awesome. So at some point, though, you're looking at your employees, you're looking at your practice and where you can grow, and also looking at the needs of your community there in Bakersfield as well. So at some point you decide to kind of expand the practice even further into, a sister practice of sorts, which is Parkway Optical Boutique. So what brought about the decision to open up that business?
Well, Parkway Optical has been an interesting development. So our practice was kind of a typical comprehensive practice as it was started. We saw comprehensive patients. We have optometrists who worked with us. We sold glasses. Hey, we did medical surgery. You actually do a lot of aesthetics as well. And then as our facility space grew, we had the opportunity to move to a building right next door. And then we were asking the question of, do we wanted to create space for optical in our new building? And, you know, a few issues came up. Number one is we were kind of running out of space before we even moved into the new building in terms of how we wanted to use it. And instead of moving out of our old office, we decided to stay there. So we decided an optical obviously takes a lot of space, and we thought about ways of integrating that with the reception area / waiting room. And then one thing that was important to us is our relationship with our referring optometrists in the community. Is a lot of optometrists make their living off selling off glasses, whereas we provide that service for patients because we have a lot of patients who want that. But as surgeons, primarily, we make our livings off doing surgery and seeing medical patients. So, you know, we decided, hey, we want to create an environment where optometrists could refer their patients and they come to our office and not be exposed to our glasses inventory and say, hey, I want to come over here. Whereas, hey, they come to me for surgery. We do the surgical care, send them back for the routine comprehensive care with the referring doctor. So it was a kind of a natural break, both from a space standpoint and from a community need standpoint, to kind of have that as a separate business. So we decided just to change the name, keep the location slightly different so that it's not a place where patients would come stumbling into when they're trying to come to our office. And we told our community referral doctors, like, hey, you know, we're calling it this, and we're not trying to sneak one on them, but just let them know, you know, these are for our existing patients, you know, who are seeing us for routine eye exams and glasses. That's part of our comprehensive practice. But we do have a separate surgical practice, which is the part that will take the care of your patients.
Gotcha.
And it's worked out pretty well.
Good. Talk about some of the challenges of expanding from one practice into two. I mean, I know they're not the same businesses, but obviously you work very closely together, share, you know, some of the space, and obviously share a lot of the same leadership. So how do you navigate the challenge of running two separate businesses, so to speak?
Well, I think, you know, in some ways it's like having a satellite office, right? You can run it as together or separate as you want. Corporately, we're still one corporation. So, you know, we can do the books. We do track as separate items with the two entities. You know, if you were to have a separate location, we used to actually have a satellite location, which we combined when we moved facilities, is you can run them kind of as together and separate as you want. And when it comes to doing financials is, you know, when you break out line items, it's okay, what information is this going to tell me? You know, what actionable information will that provide? And because you can break things down as much as you want, and it may not be useful, it's just kind of busy work. But in this case is understanding, you know, how the financials are working on that side versus the main office. The toughest part has been leadership. It's always about people. It's about having people who can physically be at the place working with the staff to get them to do, you know, what needs to be done. And having enough good leaders in good positions is always a challenge. So working through that, you know, you can kind of supervise your area where you're physically at, and can you go over to the other area? So that's been some of the challenges that we're navigating through from a staffing perspective.
And beyond just the two practices, you have a nonprofit as well. Can you talk about some of the work you're doing there?
Yes. And about 10 years ago, we also started Advanced Center for Eye Care. So it's a nonprofit here in Kern County in Central California that's meant to serve those who are don't have access to traditional insurances. Either they're uninsured or underinsured. A lot of times people have Medi-Cal, is what we call it, or Medicaid, I think, nationwide insurance, or some sort of managed care where you have an insurance card, but there are very few doctors who can actually see you, particularly in a timely fashion. We were taking some of these patients within our primary practice, and then we realized it required really a different set of care. Now, there's a certain baseline set of quote-unquote standard of care that we want to provide everybody, but these aren't people who are going to be interested in aesthetics procedures or LASIK or presbyopia-correcting technologies. But they are people who still need good eye care. They need glasses. Mm-hmm. They need cataracts taken out. They need their glaucoma managed. So we started a nonprofit, and that provides a number of opportunities. Number one is, when you have a nonprofit, you get to work with your community. You get to do it. There's charitable support, both from individuals and through organizations, because really the finances are much harder on that side. We do have a separate facility. We have an executive director who's now the CEO of the nonprofit, who's really taken the approach of, this is not some low-end place. Is at times the equipment, even the facilities, at my nonprofit were better than my private practice, really challenged me to continue providing a better level of experience for my patients. So it's been a neat journey. We have a number of optometrists employed through there, a number of surgeons operate through there. For about 5 years, I was donating my services to the nonprofit. Now I do surgery there for a very discounted fee, and a lot of times I just waive that fee. So it's a neat opportunity to reach a different segment of the population, and the need is always there. But to do it in an efficient way that allows an organization to continue to survive is always the challenge. And the big secret to a nonprofit is, doesn't mean you don't make money or charge money. It just means that you're not taking any money home. All the money stays within the organization. But you still have to run positive, because no organization can continually run negative and still survive.
But you get to do some good along the way and help, you know, reinvest in your community, especially for those patients who otherwise wouldn't have received either the same level of care or care in the same time frame as they would need it.
Exactly. And one of the big things that we've been doing of late is working with schools to have school-based eye clinics where our optometrists will go to the clinics in the different districts and provide glasses for kids. And that's key, is if you can't see, you can't make it through school, you fall through the educational cracks. That's just a lost opportunity and a really a lost life, so to speak. So just partnerships with that, which really through the nonprofit platform allows us to be able to do and provide services.
That's awesome. What have you found to be most effective in managing your employees between the two practices and your nonprofit as well? And how do you keep everybody aligned?
I think the most important thing in terms of managing employees is really having the right managers, is having the right people in place who are able to know what's needed, able to communicate what's needed, and to be able to lead. And I feel as our businesses and organization grows here, is my ability to identify and to groom and develop leaders is as important as anything, any other skill that I have. There are people who are very good employees. We've had employees who are super techs or super, you know, front office people or super whatever they do. And when we promote them to a leadership role, maybe they didn't do so good. They really weren't leaders. They were just really good at their role. And the challenge is to be able to get them back into that role and continue doing it well, while kind of saving face, so to speak, because you know there's a natural assumption that there's a progression towards management, but that's not the case for everybody. And some people, they aren't built for that; they're not interested in that. So it doesn't mean that they have to do that to be able to progress. So you know, we've tried; we've had some people kind of go through and go back, quote unquote, back to their original roles and still thrive. So sometimes there's some trial and error. Unfortunately, sometimes when people don't make it in management, they just don't feel right in the organization, they leave. But being careful to build that structure so that, number one, there's good organization within the organization. Number two is, if I'm gone, either on vacation or otherwise, the organization continues to go.
You really have to find the best role for everybody who's contributing to your practice. And you know, everybody's talents and gifts and abilities might look a little bit different. So there is really a right role for everybody. And you just kind of have to figure what that is over time.
Exactly. Exactly. And seeing that, and particularly people with different personalities approach things differently. And each manager has their own personality. And I have my personality and I kind of see certain things, but it's to value, you know, the differences we have and getting the right people on the bus, so to speak, and getting the right people in the right seat to get them working well together.
Gotcha. And, you know, obviously you can't build a thriving practice or a second practice or a nonprofit for that matter without an outstanding team to surround you and support you. So what do you look for personally when you're bringing someone new onto your team?
There's a good book called The Ideal Team Player by Pat Lencioni. And he talks about three aspects that you look for. Now obviously there's the CV and experience and all that stuff that you still want to go through. But the three things he says that helps you find the ideal team player is, number one, that they're hungry. Number two, that they're humble. Number three, that they're people smart. So humble, hungry, and people smart. So humble means basically someone who's able to take correction. And that's probably the hardest thing to assess in an interview situation, because, you know, people are on their best behavior. But to know if, you know, are they willing to learn? Do they realize they still have stuff to learn? Mm-hmm. We've had people, we've hired them, they seem to know everything. They had a great experience. And they, when they come in, it's like, they already know everything. So it's hard to teach them anything. Mm-hmm. The second thing is hunger, is really wanting to do more. Is really wanting to grow, whether to, you know, get more certification as a technician or more administrative training, to grow the business, to grow the practice, to grow themselves. So humble, hungry, and then people smart. And that's probably the easiest one to get a feel for in an interview, is if someone that you like, you know, they're very personable, they interact well. Those are the three components that when you have that, you have that quote unquote ideal team player. Hmm. So trying to get somebody that fits, and sometimes it's a lot of interviews. You go through a lot of people and you say, oh, this person has experience. They fit the role. And you look at the CV, this is great. And then they just don't have the drive, mm-hmm. or they, like I said, already know everything, or they just don't interact well with people and they just don't fit the organization. So we try to hire based on potential and qualities more than necessarily experience, because you can always gain experience. You can always teach knowledge, mm-hmm. But it's really hard to change somebody's attitude, and how they interact with people.
And it is important to take your time and spend that time and effort to really get it right. Because once you've made that commitment and you've hired somebody, you know, if they're not a good fit for your organization, or, you know, likewise, if your organization isn't really a good fit for them, there are costs to that. So if I'm hearing you correctly, it really does matter if you take the time and the effort to get that right and get your team right, even if it takes a little bit longer.
And I agree. And it's not just the interview, right? When they come on board, is having the onboarding process, having quick evaluations, you know, even within the first 90 days, having them train and then seeing if they fit. If they don't fit, you go ahead and go your separate ways. Mm-hmm. And I tell people the interview process, I like, you know, hey, you know, you probably want this job. You're going to say what you can to get this job. But as an employer, my job is to find a good fit, because it's really easier for both of us. Mm-hmm. If you do fit, if you don't fit and you fake it and you come in, you know, you get work for a few weeks, but you're just not going to fit and you're not going to be happy. We're not going to be happy. So it's kind of hard to see it from a applicant side, because you have this, imagine you want a job. Mm-hmm. But from an employer side, is you're really about finding the best long-term fit. And when they start, the key is not to say, okay, let's go, let's hope it works, is to make it work. And then if they don't work, is you have that review process where, you know, you give them verbal feedback, give them written feedback, and if need be, you know, you terminate them. But the goal is to not have to do that, because, you know, you've picked the right person, you've brought them through the process. So it's not about just interviewing. The interview is only the first step. It's really getting them incorporated.
Gotcha. And, you know, an interview, a CV, it's kind of like a first date. Everybody looks good. But then once you get people into the organization, see how you relate to each other and how you work together, that's where you really find out.
Right. There's a lot of people who don't look good. So that's pretty easy to weed out. But a lot of people do look good. You would be surprised at how people show up for interviews, and it's a pretty easy decision. And I never feel bad cutting the interview short. Now, thankfully, now I'm mostly doing second and, you know, maybe third interviews instead of the first interview. But mm-hmm. It's like, well, let's not waste each other's time. You know, it's 5-10 minutes. Okay, you're good.
So you obviously work very closely with your brother at Empire Eye and Laser. And I know many physicians have to navigate that partner relationship carefully, but I imagine it gets more interesting when your partner isn't just a partner, he's also family. So what does that relationship look like, and what have you learned from it over the years?
You know, I asked that question when I decided to come here, and the advice I was given is just defining the relationship from a business standpoint. We're pretty good as guys. I think men more than women are good at compartmentalizing. So when we're in social situations, and we've learned that in those situations, is we just try to stay away from business talk. We're at work, we talk about business. But I think with any partners, the toughest part is having the same vision and goals for the practice. For my brother and me, we know, hey, we both love each other. We want to look out for each other's best interests. The difficult part is the way we think we achieve that is very different. So we have different perspectives on what we think we should do for the business, on, you know, how we think we should run things. So that gets into any kind of partner disagreement or dispute. So It's not easy. And from a family standpoint, the stakes are higher because mm-hmm. obviously that could potentially go outside of the business and affect the relationship. But I think we've been good at trying to compartmentalize that and say, hey, you know, business is business there. And then we're in, you know, family time with our kids. You know, that's family time with our kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what a rewarding and enriching experience to have a good relationship and to be able to expand that beyond, you know, just, oh, here's business for us. But, you know, to, I guess, use both facets of your life to have a good business relationship and a good personal relationship with your family. That sounds like a real blessing.
The perspective is, and sometimes we have our arguments, and I know you work with family as well, which is great. And I think the perspective is, I would rather have an argument with my brother than not know my brother. Mm. When I was living in a different state, we'd hang out for vacation. We'd talk on the phone every now and then. And, you know, we'd go on vacation maybe every year or something. But here we see each other regularly. And even if sometimes we're disagreeing or arguing in a board meeting, is at least I know him and at least I get to spend time with him. So, you know, that's the important thing is in any relationship, sometimes the closest ones are the hardest ones. But that's where we grow. You know, if everything was easy, then we wouldn't have any space for growth.
Yeah. No, that's a really great perspective. So for our listeners who may either be thinking about starting their own practice someday or perhaps expanding an existing practice they've bought into, what advice would you give them as someone who's done this before, who's lived it for over a decade? What does that look like and what advice would you give them?
You know, it's funny. I never really wanted to be a business owner. I never went into it doing this. And I've had just increasing responsibilities through the years. And it's about, I think it's about having your priorities straight. You know, if you want to say, I want to make money and that's my goal, that's your goal and you can do that. I think it's a lot more rewarding as a career to say, you know what, I want to build an organization where we have great people who come together and we do great things. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters, right? In your proverbial deathbed, you know, you're not going to care about how many cataracts you did or how much money you made. It's about the people whose lives you made a difference in. So finding the best people you can, and also finding when there's somebody good, is trying to say, hey, is there a space within the organization where this person could get plugged in? You know, there's been many instances where I've had friends or people in the community where it's, hey, they need a job or they need something. It's like, well, we kind of have a need here. Let's plug you in. And trying to get good people as opposed to say, oh, here's a spot. Let's find somebody is the way you want to grow. And that goes for anywhere from staff to, you know, the toughest recruits. Obviously are your physicians, your providers, and they need to really fit within the culture of the organization as well.
And of course, marketing does have to be part of starting a new practice because, you know, people have to know you exist after all. If you had one marketing pearl to offer to physicians who want to start their own practice someday, what advice would you give them? What would you say?
Marketing starts internally and then it expands externally. So having your staff on board, understanding what's going on, knowing what you do, having things in your reception area inside your office where patients come in, they can be educated before you start pushing, doesn't necessarily before, but needs to be concurrent with when you push things out. If you say, I'm going to put a website up or put some ads up, and then patients show up and you're not what you've advertised, then there's an inconsistency in the message there. So really developing that from the core, starting from really who you are as an owner into what you're making this practice, because your practice really takes your personality or the personality of the owners to educating the staff to pushing that out. It's just being consistent from the inside out.
Well, Daniel, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. Lots of valuable advice here, and I think our listeners can get a lot out of it. If any of our listeners want to learn more about you or your practice or connect, where can they find you?
My practice is Empire Eye and Laser Center. The website is empireeyeandlaser.com. It's all one word. We have Facebook and Instagram, social media presence as well. And then, of course, my email is just dchang@empireeyeandlaser.com.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Chang, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for having this resource for physicians. It's been a pleasure.